Here.
Mr. Raybould?
Here.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Here.
Mr. Graham?
Here.
And Mr. Barker?
Here.
Okay, we have seven present.
Okay, we also probably ought to have the other folks on the line just identify themselves so that everybody knows who's on the call.
Chairman of the North Snake Groundwater District is on.
Dean Stevenson, Chairman of the Magic Valley Groundwater District is on.
This is Randy Budge, attorney for the districts, and also IGWA on.
Lynn Tominaga, Idaho Groundwater Appropriators.
Okay, and then here in the office, we have myself and Mandy, Clive Strong, John Holman, and John Bowling with Idaho Power Company. Are we ready to move into the agenda? Okay, first, I just want to say thank you for making the time today. And I hope it isn't impacting anybody's holiday plans and time with their families too significantly.
Brian?
Yes.
This is Bert Stevenson. Before we start this, I would like for the record to show that I do have property in the Magic Valley Groundwater District. I would ask unanimous consent from the board to be allowed to participate in the discussion. It's my intention to also vote for the record.
Anybody have a problem with that?
No.
No.
Okay, you're on board.
Thank you. Appreciate it from the board members.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is concerns the proposed Aqualife lease to the member districts of the Idaho Groundwater Appropriators. As you may recall, the 2014 legislature directed the board to acquire the Aqualife facility from the Department of Parks and Recreation for $1.635 million in furtherance of the state's desire to reduce groundwater use conflicts in the Hagerman Valley. Through the course of negotiations, it became advantageous for the board to acquire additional lands from parks that included the spring water supply, which were acquired for an additional $250,000 for a total purchase price of $1.885 million. The Aqualife facility is located in the Hagerman Valley, has a spring water supply of about 35 CFS with some seasonal fluctuation. It's also noteworthy the facility is in a state of significant deterioration. The proposal contemplates leasing Aqualife to IGWA's member districts for a 30-year term. The districts then propose to sublet Aqualife to CPAC of Idaho in exchange for CPAC providing spring flow from its Magic Springs facility to IGWA that IGWA would then turn around and deliver to the Rangan Hatchery in order to meet the groundwater users' mitigation obligations to Rangan. This is a key component of the fourth mitigation plan for Rangan, which was approved by the director on October 29. I think it's also noteworthy that CPAC proposes to substantially rebuild the Aqualife facility and operate it for commercial fish production. The proposed lease contemplates a base rent of $10,000 per year plus a water usage component of 1,644 CFS per year for an initial rent of $67,450 per year. The water usage component will be adjusted annually based on the amount of water actually delivered into the facility, and then every third year based on the consumer price index. Attached, if it's your choice, is a resolution that provides the chairman the authority to execute a 30-year lease of the Aqualife facility with the Idaho Groundwater Appropriators and its member districts.
Any questions on that?
The
Mr. Chairman, this is Vince. I was waiting for someone else so I could be second at least. But in regards to the flows at Aqualife, Brian, have we measured those recently? And, you know, we've got 67,450, and that equates to about 41 second feet. Do you know what the flows currently are there?
The flows are about 35, give or take, right now, with some seasonal fluctuation, Vince.
What's the depletion? Have we experienced depletion as well?
There has been some, and it hasn't been quite as severe as it has at other springs like Rangan. It's more along the lines of what we've seen at, say, Blue Lakes. There has been some depletion.
And is that measured? Is there a device there that we can look at to measure that, or how do we accomplish that?
Right. There currently isn't a measurement device. What happens is the operator measures the flow over the weir boards at the end of each raceway. The department looks at that and goes, okay, that's not the best, but it's probably okay. What we intend to do while CPAC is in there rebuilding it is install a good measurement device of some sort.
And would that be at the head structure?
I would like it to be at the head structure so that we have a good idea and can just measure once. I mean, the way it is now, they have to go through and measure at the end of every raceway and then add it up.
I see. One follow-up question, if I might, Mr. Chairman, and that is we talk about the improvements there. How significant would those improvements be? What's the valuation of those improvements? And then if, in fact, the lease was terminated somewhere along the line during the 30 years, how is that handled? Does that revert to the board, or how do we proceed along those lines?
Okay, I'll handle the first question, and I think I'm going to ask John Holman to handle the second question regarding lease termination. My understanding is that CPAC proposes to basically demolish what's there and build a new facility. And it would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of several million dollars. When Fish and Game looked at it, they came up with $8 million. I don't think CPAC needs the same facilities Fish and Game did. But I think it's going to be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they invest, you know, $3-5 million into it. As far as the other question regarding termination of the lease and the valuation of the facilities, I'm going to have to ask John Holman to handle that question.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alberti, the lease provides that upon termination that it reverts back to the landlord, which would be the board, any improvements, unless negotiated otherwise. There's always the possibility of negotiation between the parties at the lease termination date.
Is that something that should be spelled out in a lease?
Well, I believe it is. I'm trying to find it here. Fumbling through the... It talks about that it reverts back to the landlord unless otherwise negotiated. I think is the exact language, if I can find it. I'll continue to look through that, Brian.
Isn't it page 10? 9.1.2.
Did somebody just join us?
I think someone dropped out.
Yeah, I think that was a hang-up call, Roger. Well, perhaps while John's looking for that exact...
Yeah, that's fine. If it's covered, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Well, we should find that, because I don't see it in there.
It says page 10 on here, and I'm just looking now.
Okay, did someone just join the call?
No, Parker. I dropped off, and no one
else. Okay. You know, perhaps, Roger, we can move on to additional questions while John's looking for that exact language.
Yeah,
I would have a question, Mr. Chairman, on that, what Vince was asking about. Just the way I read the clause.
Okay, let's do that. Let John find that, and then...
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. I had a question about the first right of refusal clause. I think it's 10.4. You know, it's an exclusive first right of refusal to the tenant. And I wondered, are we okay doing that? Or, I mean, we got some cooperation from Parks to transfer this thing to us when we needed it. Do we need to have some kind of an option in there if another state agency wants this or needs this, and the board no longer feels like they need it, that another state agency would have priority over a private party?
I didn't see anything that says that. Comments there from in the room?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this is Randy Budge. I think it would be problematic if anyone other than the districts had the right of first refusal to acquire it. And the reason is CPAC has been very emphatic that this lease is a short-term arrangement, and they desire to acquire ownership, if at all possible. And so if anticipated legislation is passed to authorize the board to sell the property, then the districts really need to be in the position of exercising their right of first refusal to acquire, so it could in turn be transferred to CPAC. That is a critical and integral part of the memorandum of agreement between the districts and CPAC.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, follow up. Randy, are you anticipating that legislation forthcoming in the next session?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm probably okay. I just wanted to raise the issue. I'm really not worried about it. We've had some cooperation from Parks. I don't want to find ourselves in a position that, you know, 17 years from now we can't cooperate with another state agency if the need was there. But if this is a short-term arrangement, then we're probably okay.
This is Roger. John or Clyde, do you agree with that? I know that there's some discussion that we should make sure that the state gets this after 30 years.
Mr. Chairman, I think what Randy said is probably the way that CPAC, who's sitting in the background here, will sublease this from the groundwater districts, probably wants some sort of assurance that this is going to be tied up. Now, that doesn't keep us from negotiating that clause. That's something I think that is a relatively new event here in the negotiations, and it probably would have to involve CPAC to see if they were still willing to do that. I don't know if I characterized that right, Randy, but...
Well, this is Roger again. Does that mean that right now, if IGWA wanted to get out of this lease or didn't want to do the lease anymore, it comes back to the state, then at that time, if somebody else wanted it, we would negotiate it, but it doesn't mean we necessarily have to transfer this water right to anybody else if the state so wants to hold it.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Thank
Roger,
you.
Roger, this is Jeff. I don't see anything in this arrangement that would require us to sell either the facilities or the water if we didn't want to. It's if we determined to sell it, which sounds like there may be legislation coming that would help us make that determination. If that determination was made, then the tenant would have the first right of refusal to buy the property. I suppose same best terms.
Thanks, Jeff. And then this question would be for Randy. Randy, who's bringing this legislation? Well, I'll defer to
Clive on that if I could.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's my anticipation that the speaker who has been involved intimately in this process will take the lead in finding a sponsor for the legislation.
Okay. Thank you. I guess my concern there was again, and I guess the legislation will cover that. I mean, if we transfer this to somebody else 20 years down the road or so forth, I don't want to leave the board at that time in a position where they could have a call on them over this water. I guess it would be coordinated to everything else.
Mr. Chairman, this is Brian. That would be our intent, is that if the legislature chooses to pass that legislation, that would give the board the discretion to sell the facility at some point in the future, that it be sold with the proper subordinations of water rights and so on and so forth, so that this facility would not go out and be able to make a call against the aquifer.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is John again. You asked a question earlier about improvements upon the termination of the lease. The section in the lease that addresses the process for that is in section 4.4. It's entitled Alteration, and it's a relatively long paragraph there. It establishes the process where a tenant receives approval from the landlord at the time that the improvements or the alterations would be installed on the premises. And then it contemplates upon the tenant leaving that they would be able to take some of the improvements or improvements made that are approved, or they may be negotiated with the landlord. And then if that isn't accomplished within 180 days, then that right is canceled and the improvements remain on the property.
Vince, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it answers my question, but I guess my concern was that if this, and I realize it's a 30-year agreement, but if year 15 or somewhere in that area that things go south, what we would end up with might be less than an operating facility. And I don't know if that needs some additional language, but I see that's pretty ambiguous, that some of it could be removed and some couldn't, and where we are there. But if that's all right with the rest of the board, I just thought I'd bring it. I read that earlier, but I just have a question in regards to where we might be. The less gray we have in the agreement, the better. The more black and white we have, I think, the better.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alberti, it does also contemplate that in the event that the tenant would remove any type of improvement, that the premises be restored to the condition that it was in at the time of the installation of that improvement.
Yeah, I understand. Mr. Chairman, John, I know where we're going there, but I was just hoping that if something should happen, that we would have a facility that we could put back into production relatively easily and wouldn't have to restore it at that time. But that may not be attainable.
Mr. Chairman,
I guess I agree with Vince. I think this, the way this is written, the tenant has the right to tear everything down that they build and take it with them. So you end up with nothing, particularly if the idea is that they're going to just demolish the buildings and build new ones. This contemplates that they can take the buildings with them, which is very unusual in a lease, that fixtures usually belong to the landlord, not to the tenant.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff.
Go ahead.
I agree with Al and Vince. I'm wondering if this paragraph does need to be improved a little bit. I mean, I can see if they bring a pump onto the property or something, wanting the ability to maybe remove something that, that would typically you could just pick up and take with you. But buildings, if they put cement and all that kind of stuff in, it looks to me like that ought to be retained by the owner of the property.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
This Randy, let me comment on that. I apologize, I'm out of the office and don't have the lease provision in front of me that you're looking at, but I can tell you that it was certainly contemplated that if the lease were terminated, the tenant could remove fixtures, things that are readily removable, but not items that are considered to be attachments to the land. So buildings that are permanently affixed that was not contemplated, they would be removable. And if the language is unclear in that respect, we can readily modify it.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Al Barker, the language says a tenant may remove any buildings or improvements added or replaced by the tenant during the occupancy. So I think it is broader than what Randy suggests that the intent of the parties was.
And so we can fix that, though, real fast?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, because this lease is between us and IGWA, the groundwater users, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have one more question just about a technicality on the lease, and that is there's an insurance provision in there that requires the tenant to maintain liability insurance, requires the tenant to maintain property insurance for its portion of the facility, for its interest in the facility, but is silent on the property coverage, fire and casualty coverage for anything that would be owned by the board. And I'm wondering if that was the intent, and if so, that suggests to me that we need to maintain our own property insurance for this, which if that was the if that was the deal, that was the deal, but I think we all need to know that we would have that additional cost.
That's in 6.1?
Yes. Yeah. If that was the intent, John, Do you know that? Can you help us on that?
Yeah. Let me, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bark, let me review that. I will say that the state will carry separate insurance through the on the building.
Okay. That's fine. As long as we all know we've got... I just don't like to have a gap in insurance coverage.
Other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, in reference to the removal of improvements, we can go back into Section 4.4 and clarify that personal property or removable fixtures, not real property, you know, that's attached, can be removed by the tenant or subject to negotiation. But if it's real property that or improvement, that will stay at the time of the lease termination.
Randy, you're okay with that?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on this one? So it sounds like to me then that we've got two things we want to clean up a little bit. Subject to that, is there any other questions? If not, is there a motion?
Chairman, this is Jeff. I move that we adopt the resolution subject to the two changes in the lease that we discussed.
Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, Al Barker, I will second that motion.
Any further discussion? Call roll, please, Mandy.
Okay, Mr. Alberti?
Aye.
Mr. Stevenson?
Aye.
Mr. Raybould?
Aye.
Mr. Vandermeulen? Do we have Mr. Vandermeulen on the line? Mr. Graham?
Aye.
Mr. Barker?
Aye.
Okay, so we have five ayes. Oh, and Sherman Chase.
The eye from Chase.
Okay, so we have six ayes. I apologize.
Okay. We'll move forward at that. Bob, it was good to hear your voice. I thought we were lost. You lost you up there. Let's go on to the next item.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the next item is a loan request from the North Snake Magic Valley Groundwater Districts for a related item. The two districts are requesting a short-term loan to build a pumping plant and pipeline in conformance with the approved fourth mitigation plan for Rangan. Although they have requested $2.75 million for various reasons, the loan will be limited to $1.26 million. As you all are aware, back in January, the Director Spackman issued an order regarding Rangan's delivery call, that would curtail ESPA groundwater rights, junior to 1962, unless mitigation is provided to Rangan on or before January 19 of 2015. The two districts are proposing to use these funds on a short-term basis to finance the construction of what's called the Magic Springs Project, which consists of a pumping station and 1.6-mile-long pipeline to deliver 10 CFS of spring flow from CPAC's Magic Springs hatchery to the Rangan hatchery in order to meet those mitigation obligations. As we discussed previously, this is a key component of IGWA's fourth mitigation plan, which was approved by Director Spackman on October 29. The pipeline is about 60% complete, more or less, with and on track to meet that January 2015 deadline. The districts had requested $2.75 million. However, the loan will need to be limited to $1.26 million until additional borrowing authority is granted. In October of 2011, these two districts, together with several other groundwater districts, jointly received authority through judicial examination or judicial confirmation to incur indebtedness of up to $35 million for the purpose of undertaking mitigation projects. This authority was used to borrow money using revenue bonds issued by the Water Resource Board, the proceeds from which were used to acquire several commercial fish hatcheries. That was the Hardy purchase. Of the $35 million authorized through that judicial confirmation process, approximately $33.2 million was used, leaving $1.8 million remaining unused in borrowing authority. The two groundwater districts together comprise about 70% of the authority granted through that judicial examination process, resulting in $1.26 million of borrowing authority remaining for the Magic Valley and North Snake districts. In addition, the short-term loan would be repaid no later than September 30 of 2015, which is the end of the district's fiscal year. Now, in a follow-up effort, the districts are in the process of preparing and will be shortly filing a petition for judicial examination for authority to incur up to an additional $5 million in long-term debt for two purposes: one, to repay the short-term loan, and then two, to finance additional mitigation projects in the Hagerman Valley area. The plan for this additional $5 million, would that it be in the form of revenue bonds issued by the board, similar to the previous hatchery purchase? With that, Mr. Chairman, realize that was a fairly complex discussion. However, you do have a resolution attached that would approve the short-term loan in the amount of $1.26 million for the project and give the chairman the authority to enter into agreements with the districts. With that, I would stand for any questions that the board may have.
Mr. Chairman, this Bird, I have one question on the whereases. Lynn, you could probably answer this question for me here, where it says, whereas the North Snake Groundwater District is comprised of 106,600 acres of groundwater
backed
by lands in Jerome, Minidoka, and Lincoln counties. As I remember that, North Snake does not come into Minidoka County. Am I correct or incorrect on that?
No, you're correct on that. Our district actually is in Lincoln County, Gooding County, and Jerome County.
Okay, that Minidoka actually should be
Gooding.
Gooding County.
Yes.
Okay. That's the only question I had on the resolution.
Thanks, Bert. Other questions?
This is Vance, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions that I have here looking at your application. Now, if I see that you got 128,000 plus acres that you serve, and the fees on those are $14 an acre, and that brings us to somewhere close to 1.8, and then I see the payment, your annual payments are 1.3 and 358,000 there to Pristine and the revenue bonds leaving around 400,000. And what is the payment on this loan? And by looking at this, I just can't tell without an income statement. I'm sure that's not an issue as far as being able to pay for it, but I can't ascertain that because I know my good friend Randy sends these guys a bill every month as well.
Vince, this is Dean. Our anticipation is that there'll be an increase in assessment to cover this.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we didn't increase the assessment this last year. 14 is what our current assessment is. We didn't increase it because we didn't know last June. We didn't have an approved plan, but we had enough cash reserves to get most of the way down the road on this, but there will be an increase coming next year on our assessment.
That's good to hear. I know you guys are good businessmen, and I knew that probably wasn't an issue, but I felt compelled to answer it because I couldn't determine that from what was being provided.
Mr. Chairman and Vince, this is Lynn Carlquist with North Snake Groundwater District. Beginning with this next fiscal year, we have already increased our assessments to almost a little over, it depends on how the water rights is structured, but around 18, we do it by CFS, but if you work it backwards, we're at about $18 an acre now for the agricultural water rights within our district. And I believe the two districts that are requesting the loan, there's over 200,000 acres involved in those districts that are requesting a loan with North Snake and Magic Valley Groundwater District.
Oh, that's so good to hear. You know, it's been kind of our policy, if you might, Lynn and Dean, to ask whomever we're making a loan to set aside a one-year reserve. Any problems with that?
Vince, this is Dean. One more thing, now let me bring in that might clarify this. Southwest Irrigation is also going to be part of this, but because they're an irrigation district, they can't go the path we're going. They have to come in and they have to do an election of their membership and judicial confirmation. So they'll actually be coming in as a financial partner down the road on this. And and the other part on reserves, we've had substantial reserves in the past. The way this project came up, we're having to use all of our reserves. The one thing we are going to maintain, if we get this loan, we'll be able to maintain our reserves we have to for our bond covenants.
And it would be over a period of 1 year, then, and then you would have a reserves 1 year. Is that what I understand?
Right. When we get into our next election cycle, we'll have the reserves, and also the other partner on this will be Southwest, and they'll come in after there, and then we'll work an internal deal with them. They won't be on this loan, but they'll receive the benefit of this loan, and so they'll have to come in and work with us. And this loan will be is a short term loan anyway. I think, isn't that what we decided? This one would be a shorter term loan here until we get our judicial confirmation. Can we do it all?
Right, Vince. This is Brian. Dean's exactly right. Remember, this loan has to be repaid no later than September 30 of 2015. So we're talking not even 1 year here.
Okay.
What this does, this gets them the money to finish the project and then go get their judicial confirmation to carry out an additional $5 million in long-term debt that would be used to repay this note and then undertake additional projects in the Hagerman Valley.
Brian, do you know what the payments would be for this loan?
Well, this one would be 1.26 repayable. Plus 3.5% interest, I think.
Okay.
Brian, this is Bob. I assume we have the 126 in current funds?
Yes, you do.
Thanks. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman and board members, this is Lynn Pearlquist again. The two districts, North Snake and Magic Valley Groundwater District, will probably end up with the proceeds from this loan, also investing from our reserves close to $2.5 to $2.7 million. The project's total cost to get it completed by January 20th is going to be about $3.8 million, and so we are also investing on top of what we're going to receive from this loan, that somewhere around that $2.7 million that will come from the district's reserves now.
This is Dean Stevens again. One of the reasons we're in kind of a spot here is with the director's Judge Wildman's order, and it's being appealed, we don't really know who's going to be in the boat on this mitigation, but we know for sure the Magic Valley, North Snake, and Southwest are. And so we're the ones that are going to have to cover this to start with. And then those that have future obligations will have to come buy in on the deal.
Thanks, Dean. Any other questions? Comments?
Roger, this is Jeff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Is there any collateral attached to this? Typically we attach some water rights or something. Taking this on a couple of signatures. I'm fine with that. I just want to clarify my
point. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask John Holman to take a stab at that answer real quick.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould, the collateral, there is no collateral on this short-term loan.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. That's what I thought.
Jeff, this is Dean, Mr. Chairman, and Jeff, when we did our bonding, we also had no collateral, and essentially the collateral we put forward is the ability for our districts to assess, right, is what we've done in the past.
Okay, that's good enough for me.
Any other questions? Okay. Is there a motion to adopt this? I blanked out. Do we have some changes we were going to make to this, or is this okay as it stands?
Mr. Chairman,
this is Bert again. I would think we ought to make a change in that on the whereas to delete for North Snake, delete Minidoka County and add Gooding County.
That's right.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we got it. We got that change.
Sorry, Brian, I didn't get that to you the other day when I got that.
This is Bob, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Bob.
I make a motion that we accept it as it's written with those current two changes.
Is there a second?
I'll second that, Mr. Chairman.
This is Vince.
Okay, any other questions? Call the roll, Mandy.
Okay, Mr. Alberti?
Aye.
Mr. Stevenson?
Aye.
Mr. Rabels?
Aye.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Aye.
Mr. Graham?
Aye.
Mr. Barker?
Aye.
And Chairman Chase?
Aye.
Okay, we have seven ayes.
Okay.
All right, Mr.
Thanks, Dean, and all you guys. Lynn, we sure thank your work on this.
This is Dean. I guess, Brian, as soon as you get some paperwork together, if you get it to us, then we can take care of that.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll get it out to you as soon as we can.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, this is Lynn Carlquist. I appreciate your willingness to work with us on this. The timetable involved with getting this project complete is a difficult one for us, and without this help, we would be really in tough shape, having to try some additional financing somewhere. And so this will really help us along and get this thing completed in a timely manner. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is Dean. Thank you, members of the board, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate this.
You know, Dean, you might want to hang around on this next item just for a minute. Are we ready to move on to item four?
When you are, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, well, board members, one thing we've got a meeting coming up in January, and there's been some discussion from the board. Jeff and subcommittee worked on sustainability ideas for the governor to ask us last year. One of the things that I'm going to have on the agenda in January is a discussion on what can we do to move forward with a sustainability plan. I bring that up because one of my concerns is that all the projects we're going to try to do to recharge the aquifer and things like that, if we continue to pump more and more water out of the aquifer, we might not be able to ever catch up. And I don't have any ideas, but I think it's a discussion that we probably need to start having about where we're going to go with this. I don't know if you guys, how you feel about that. Is that okay to put that on the agenda to figure out how we're going to discuss that? It may end up in a subcommittee to get it going again, but just your thoughts on that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dean Stevenson, and Lynn, I guess you chime in. We've had that same discussion in our districts. We have concerns about the declining aquifer levels and realize that we need to try to maintain this resource for the future, and I think we're more than willing to enter in that. The difficulty we have in the groundwater districts is we don't hold water rights, and so it becomes difficult to talk about reduction in consumption because we don't have that legal authority. So that's what I think from our district, and I'm sure for North Snake, we'd be willing to be a part of that.
Mr. Chairman and board, as Dean said, our two boards and also we've presented just some preliminary discussions in our IGWA board meetings of the necessity to find ways to limit draws on the aquifer by our agricultural pumping through efficiencies and other areas. We haven't determined yet exactly how that might work best because of the fact that the permits, the water rights that are granted to the members of the districts allow them to pump generally up to 4 acre feet. We have talked about working some way to limit that by at least maybe half of that amount. We're not sure exactly the best way to go forward on that, but we realize that something has to be done probably in the future in that direction.
Well, I appreciate that you guys have been on top of that because it's going to be maybe as tough a question as we've ever dealt with. But we've got to do something, and it's better to start now than to wait until it's a catastrophe.
This is Lynn.
Do you guys think doing that?
and discuss it when we have our next board meeting. But Dean is right. One of the issues is we do not have any regulatory authority within the groundwater districts. That is done by the water master, and that's an issue that we have to try and overcome.
Thanks, Led.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff.
Jeff, go ahead.
I think your suggestion to put this on your agenda for January is very timely. Certain anticipated rates of depletion were contemplated when the ESPA camp was formulated and that plan was passed. And we probably need to go back and revisit those and see to what degree there's increased diversion from the aquifer that we need to take into account as we plan how we're going to stabilize the aquifer. So I'm all for having that discussion, I think we need to do it sooner rather than later.
Roger, this is Bert. I think it'd be a good idea to have that on our agenda for January.
And again, just a start, but to have that discussion. Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman, this is Vince. That's a very, very good idea. It's such a difficult issue that we're facing with so few options. We know that there's options, but the options that we're looking at are curtailment, and that's the last thing that we want to do. That's the last place we want to go. And I certainly think that we've been recharging a little bit. We've been trying here and there, but whether that's going to be sufficient to do it or not, I really question that, and I think the issue that you're talking about is a big undertaking, and it's not a one session question. It's something that is going to have to be batted around for some time and have a lot of transparency and discussion to find a way forward.
Thanks, Vince. Unless I'm naive, you guys can tell me this, because sometimes I am. Not only going to be the groundwater users, everybody, all the players have to be involved in this discussion. Surface, storage, everybody.
Mr. Chairman,
okay.
You're right. I mean, even the people who rely on surface water for their primary source irrigation, as they intensify their cropping practices, they're going to utilize more surface water, which is probably going to require more storage. It just puts an overall additional load on our system that was not anticipated even 5 years ago.
Okay, we'll do that then.
Okay.
Anybody have anything else?
I'd like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and move we adjourn.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everybody. Appreciate all the hard work you do. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Good holidays, everybody. Be safe.
Thank you.